This is WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you.
Your host, J. Paul Newman of the monthly District Attorney Show, will now take you on a journey to explore recent Rutherford County court cases, cold cases, and more.
We welcome everyone to the program. My name is J. Paul Newman. My co-hosts today are Rutherford County District Attorney General Jennings Jones and Rutherford County Assistant District Attorney Trevor Lynch. We thank WGNS for providing the airtime, and we also thank our producer, Scott Walker. Most of all, we thank you for listening. We will begin our broadcast after you listen to these important messages.
If you're planning an upcoming trip and want to include your pet, we have all the travel supplies you'll need at Animal City. This is Amanda at Animal City, inviting your family to come do business with my family. Animal City is Murfreesboro's hometown family-owned pet store. We've had the honor and pleasure of serving the community for 33 years. If you want to see some photos of our adorable pets, feel free to check out our Facebook page, Animal City of Murfreesboro, Tennessee. We're at 919 Northwest Broad Street, right here in Murfreesboro.
We're excited to announce that Capstar Bank is now officially a division of Old National Bank. All those friends you've made while banking here over the years, well, they're still there. And so are the delicious, warm, homemade cookies.
In Murfreesboro at 2230 Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard.
Everything you enjoyed at Capstar, still there at Old National Bank. Old National Bank, ready to serve you.
Old National Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
The viewpoints and opinions expressed on this broadcast are the viewpoints and opinions of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the viewpoints and opinions of this show, its host, or the management of this station. You are listening to WGNS.
This is Inside the Courts, a look at this month's trials, pleas, and grand jury action. Inside the Courts is presented as a courtesy of the Rutherford County Clerk's Office.
Good morning, everyone. This is your District Attorney General, Jennings Jones, and today I will be your tour guide through the episode of Inside the Courts. We begin this segment by stating that none of the defendants named in upcoming trials or hearings have been convicted, and of course, they are presumed by our law to be innocent. With that as a prelude, we will now go inside the courts. On August the 30th of 2022, officers with the Smyrna Police Department responded to a shooting at a gas station on Sam Ridley Parkway. Mr. Nicholas Patterson had been shot during the course of an attempted robbery and later died as a result of his injuries. Surveillance video showed an armed subject enter the store, point a firearm at Mr. Patterson, fire at least one shot into the ceiling of the store, and then shoot Mr. Patterson before running out of the store. Detective Steve Hanna with the Smyrna Police Department has been assigned as lead investigator. As a result of the two other robberies, one in Brentwood and one in Nashville, Mr. Key Anthony Williams was identified as a suspect. Upon execution of a search warrant, Mr. Williams was taken into custody and found to be in possession of a firearm. Mr. Williams was interviewed by law enforcement, and at the conclusion of the interview, Mr. Williams was charged with first-degree murder, attempted aggravated robbery, and possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. A preliminary hearing was held in the Smyrna General Sessions Court, and the matter was bound over to a Rutherford County grand jury. The next scheduled court date will be August 21st of this year. Mr. Williams is represented by Assistant Public Defender Ben Wetzel, and the state is represented by Assistant District Attorney Matt Westmoreland and Trevor Lynch. On the 6th of April, 2022, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to an apartment complex on Old Las Casas Road. The body of Mr. Ryan Wolcott was found beaten and stabbed to death on the floor of his apartment. Detective Julie Cox has been assigned as the lead investigator in this case. Alistair Jennings, one of Mr. Walcott's roommates, has been developed as a suspect. Detective Cox's investigation has resulted in physical evidence and witness statements that connect Mr. Jennings to the murder of Mr. Walcott. Mr. Jennings was charged with first-degree murder. On August the 12th of 2022, a preliminary hearing was held in the General Sessions Courts of Rutherford County. Upon proof presented by the state, the court bound the matter over for presentation to a grand jury. The defendant's next scheduled court appearance is for August 15th of this year. The defendant is represented by counsel, Mr. Ben Wetzel, while the state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Matt Westmoreland and Trevor Lynch. On February the 13th of last year, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call in reference to a stabbing at a residence on Ransom Drive. Upon entry, officers discovered the body of Mr. Philip Maddox on a bedroom floor. Mr. Maddox had been stabbed multiple times. Witnesses on scene advised that Mr. Maddox's roommate, Malik Smith, admitted to stabbing Mr. Maddox. Officers located Mr. Smith, and Mr. Smith confirmed the witness's claim that he had stabbed Mr. Maddox. Detective David Miller of the Murfreesboro Police Department has been assigned as the lead investigator in this case. After a search of the residence, collection of evidence, and interviewing of all witnesses, Mr. Smith was charged with first-degree murder. On May 31st of last year, a preliminary hearing was held, and the court found probable cause to bind the matter over to a grand jury. Mr. Smith is represented by counsel, Ms. Whitney Rocky. The state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. On January 14th of last year, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to St. Thomas Hospital on a reported domestic assault. The victim, Ms. Camelita Ojeda, has been attacked by her ex-boyfriend, Ambrose Payne. Mr. Payne lured Ms. Ojeda outside of her apartment, claiming to be there to pay her some money he owed her. When Mr. Payne did not have the money, Ms. Ojeda ended the conversation and attempted to go back into her apartment. Mr. Payne put his vehicle in drive and struck Ms. Ojeda with the front bumper and ran into her, pinning her between a chain-link fence and the front of his vehicle. Mr. Payne then backed up and drove off at a high rate of speed. Officers located Mr. Payne's vehicle, finding damage and markings on the front that were consistent with Ms. Ojeda's statement. Likewise, Ms. Ojeda had physical injuries to her body consistent with being struck and pinned down by a vehicle. Mr. Payne was later located and charged with aggravated assault. On July the 2nd of 2023, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a domestic assault in progress. Once again, and while released on bail, Mr. Payne attacked and assaulted Ms. Ojeda. Mr. Payne had choked Ms. Ojeda to the point of leaving injuries on her neck. Mr. Payne released Ms. Ojeda, and she began to run away. Mr. Payne chased her and threw her to the ground and began to punch and kick the victim. A witness heard screaming and went outside and saw Mr. Payne's attack on Ms. Ojeda. Mr. Payne was once again arrested and charged with aggravated assault and kidnapping. On April 30th of this year, Mr. Payne appeared before the Chancery Court of Rutherford County and entered a plea of guilty to 3 counts of aggravated assault against Ms. Ojeda and received an effective 8-year sentence to serve in the custody of the Tennessee Department of Corrections. Mr. Payne was represented by counsel, Ms. Billy Zimmerman, with the Public Defender's Office, and the state was represented by Assistant District Attorney Sarah Davis. On September 27th of 2020, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call regarding gunshots on Gunnarsson Avenue. Upon arrival, officers located Mr. Javarius Malone with a single gunshot wound to his chest. Law enforcement officers and EMTs worked to save Mr. Malone, but he did not survive his injuries. Detective Cody Thomas with the Murfreesboro Police Department was assigned as the lead investigator. Upon interviewing witnesses, obtaining apartment complex security video footage, and using cell phone and GPS data, Gregory Lyons and Corey Lillard were identified as suspects. At the conclusion of Detective Thomas's investigation, Mr. Lyons and Mr. Lillard were charged with first-degree murder, employing a weapon during the commission of a dangerous felony, and attempting to sell a Schedule I drug. Mr. Malone was found to have owed Mr. Lyons $50 from an August transaction. On August the 29th of 2020, Mr. Lyons threatened Mr. Malone for not paying him by sending Mr. Malone an emoji of a coffin with a threatening text message. On September the 27th, Mr. Lyons learned that Mr. Malone was attempting to buy narcotics from Mr. Lillard. Mr. Lyons had gone to Mr. Lillard's house 20 minutes before Mr. Malone, and Mr. Lillard started texting regarding the sale. Mr. Lyons went with Mr. Lillard to meet with Mr. Malone and Mr. Lyons, and Mr. Lillard was armed with a .357 semi-automatic pistol. Witnesses heard yelling and then a single gunshot. Mr. Lyons and Mr. Lillard were recorded on various security camera videos riding bicycles to the location and, after the murder, recorded running away on foot. Mr. Lyons' DNA was found on the bicycle located just a few feet from Mr. Malone's body. It was later discovered that just 2 days prior to the murder, Mr. Lyons had arranged to acquire a .357 caliber pistol. On May 23rd of this year, a jury of Mr. Lyons' peers found him guilty of all charges. Mr. Lyons was sentenced by Judge Jimmy Turner to a life sentence for first-degree murder. The court set an additional sentencing hearing for September 4th of this year for the remaining convictions. Mr. Lillard has previously entered pleas of guilty to facilitation to first-degree murder in an attempt to sell a Schedule I drug. Mr. Lillard received a 20-year sentence to serve in the custody of the Tennessee Department of Corrections. Mr. Lillard was represented by counsel Mr. Thomas Maynard. The state was represented by Assistant District Attorneys Matt Westmoreland and Trevor Lynch. This will conclude today's look inside the courts.
This is Paul Newman. When we return, we will answer the question, what's the law? You are listening to this special edition of the Action Line on WGNS.
Mary Ellen Evans calls Adams Place home.
So this space here at Adams Place is large enough for anybody to create the same environment they had at home. Plus, it has things like 9-foot ceilings with architectural detail. So that gives it a feeling of spaciousness. So it's a wonderful place to call home.
Hi, this is Terry Deal at Adams Place. Call me for more information about Adams Place. Phone 615-904-9111. Adams Place.
Well, today is Friday. It is August the 2nd. Right now, the temperature outside in downtown Murfreesboro is holding at 82 degrees. The high, the high temperature. I don't know what I was trying to say. The high temperature today will reach up to 93 under partly cloudy skies. There is about a 50 to 55% chance of rain and thunderstorms today. The winds will be from the west at 8 to 15 miles per hour today. And once more, the high to reach 93. Then for tonight, a low down to 70 degrees with a 20% chance of scattered storms. And that's early in the evening. Otherwise, partly cloudy tonight. Again, the low down to 70. Then for Saturday tomorrow, high reaching 90, 10% chance of rain. Then Saturday night, no rain. Temperature down to 69. For Sunday, high temperatures reaching 93 under clear skies and only a 5% chance of rain on Sunday. Then Sunday night, no rain, temperature down to 69. Again, right now in downtown Murfreesboro, it is 82 degrees.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna, and streaming at WGNSradio.com.
From the Rutherford County District Attorney's Office, here is Assistant District Attorney Trevor Lynch.
Coming up next, we will have special guests introducing our What's the Law segment. You see, J. Paul Newman, while as an Assistant District Attorney, strive to create an internship program at the office. He successfully started a program that brought in students from MTSU. Later, he included law students from Nashville School of Law, Belmont School of Law, University of Tennessee, and Cecil Humphrey School of Law in Memphis, Tennessee. Later, he created the program, expanded the program, and brought in students from across the country.
Today with us will be Mr. Justin Santamore, who interned with our office several years ago. And along with him, Ms. Anna Kate Farrell, who is presently an intern with the District Attorney General's office. They will both be discussing briefly what their experience was and has been and currently is with the District Attorney's office. I'll now turn it over to Mr. Santamore.
Morning, everybody. This is Justin Santamore. Just want to thank J. Paul Newman and WGNS for having us out this morning. So a little bit of background about me. I'm from Riverdale High School here in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. I went on after graduating from Riverdale, went on to play baseball at Ball State, and then finished up at MTSU, have my bachelor's in political science from MTSU. While at MTSU, I was fortunate enough to have the opportunity to intern with the district attorney's office. I was there for about a year, year and a half. I started off in general sessions with Sheila, mainly, and Tom Jackson, a former and retired district attorney About 6 months in, Tom Jackson actually offered me a job to work at the front office of the district attorney's office. So I took that opportunity and ran with it. I was there for another 6 to 7 months, had the opportunity to work with Trevor Lynch, and got to see a lot of the circuit court legal system. So I went from general sessions and lower court to circuit court. Had the opportunity to see mainly Trevor really prepare a case for trial. This was the first time that I'd actually seen the legal system, so I didn't realize how much effort and time that it took. It would take months, if not years, to prepare for trial. So I assisted him in helping with case files, scheduling interviews, bringing stuff up to the courthouse, some small things. Like I said, I'm able to see the advocacy side. It was cool to see the attorney's arguments, how they presented witnesses, how to approach different kind of witnesses, whether it be an expert witness, an actual eyewitness, all those kinds of things. After my internship with the district attorney's office, I went on to go to Samford University Cumberland School of Law. I just finished my first year there, and this past summer, I actually interned with Judge Scarlett back here in Rutherford County. He does all civil work, but it was cool to see the correlation between my experience at the district attorney's office kind of carry over to my experience with the judge, because I was really able to see a different perspective, more so an objective perspective, not really an advocacy perspective. Really getting to see both sides, and you know, it was really, really cool to see Judge Scarlett and how he thought about each case and how well he prepared before each case and what went on behind the bench, what went on in the chambers. I didn't get to see that with the DA's office, but I was really able to see that with the judge. So it's been cool to be able to have the experience with the DA's office from an advocacy perspective and then also the objective perspective, Judge Scarlett. And I have nothing but great things to say about the DA's office. If any of you listeners out there are at MTSU and thinking about interning with the district attorney's office here, I would highly, highly recommend it. Everybody's awesome, very open and willing to answer any questions you have. It'll really help you to make the decision on whether or not you want to attend law school, because it's a huge decision you have to make in your life. And I think they do a great job of really educating and giving interns hands-on experience and seeing the best things that are out there.
Thanks, Justin. Good morning, everybody. I am Anna Kate Farrell, and like Trevor said, I am a current intern for the Murfreesboro District Attorney's Office. I was born and raised here in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, before going to the University of Mississippi for my undergraduate studies. I majored in both international studies and Spanish while I attended Ole Miss. But when I decided I wanted to go to law school, I knew that it was time to come home. So I chose to go to Belmont Law, where I am currently a rising 3L, meaning that I have one more year of law school before I become an attorney. I have a little bit of a different experience than Justin did in that I have had other work experience in the legal world, but it hasn't been criminal. So that to me has been what I've been most interested in working in the DA's office, is seeing that and comparing the two experiences because they are so different. But I think that being at the DA's has really rounded out my work experience as a law student. And I think it's important for any attorney to have that background in the criminal world, at least a little bit, dip your toes in it. During my time at the DA's office, I've primarily worked for Sarah Davis, someone who's been incredible to learn from. One of the biggest things that we have done is prepare for a trial that she actually had last week. So getting to see Sarah prep for that and all the work that went into it, talking to all the different characters that are involved in a trial, whether those be the victims and the eyewitnesses and the experts and law enforcement and all the many hats that Sarah has to wear before she even steps foot in the courtroom. I've really enjoyed learning what that looks like and the communication that's involved along the way. And then, of course, being in the trial, getting to see jury selection was especially one of my favorite parts. And that's when our local community members here in Rutherford County come into play, getting to see the arguments and examining witnesses, whether those be hostile witnesses or your own experts and eyewitnesses. It's been an incredible learning experience, and I am forever grateful to Sarah and the rest of the district attorney's office for letting me share in it. Thank you.
This is Paul Newman. You are listening to this special edition of The Action Line on WGNS.
The viewpoints and opinions expressed on this broadcast are the viewpoints and opinions of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the viewpoints and opinions of this show, its host,
or the management of this station. You are listening to WGNS.
What's the law?
Time now for an examination of the laws of Tennessee. This is not intended to be legal advice and is being presented solely for the informational benefit of our listening audience. You should always consult with an attorney whenever you need or rely on legal advice.
Hello, my name is Ivy Burns. I'm a rising second-year law student at the University of Tennessee College of Law. I also attended UT for undergrad, where I majored in history. As a double UT student, I'm a diehard Vol fan, so on any given weekend, you can catch me rooting on Vol sports teams. Up until I moved to college, I lived my whole life in Rutherford County. My family lives in Eagleville, and I attended Eagleville School from kindergarten to my senior year. As a result, Rutherford County is home to me, and I have an appreciation for the community and its people. This is why an internship with the district attorney's office here in my home county was appealing to me. I wanted to apply some of what I had learned in law school to assist and begin to understand the legal world at a local level. And that is exactly what I have done this summer. I've interacted with assistant district attorneys on a daily basis, taking their legal questions, conducting research to find answers, and typing up my findings along with my thoughts on the case. After my research, we sit and talk about what I have found and how it impacts the case they are working on. Also, I attend meetings with defense attorneys, police officers, and detectives, which has given me some insight on how law enforcement works from the very beginning of cases to their endings. Sitting in on meetings with victims and their families has taught me the reality and humanity behind the legal world, because each case that comes through the office has very real implications in people's lives. Another great part of the internship is the opportunity to attend court for hearings and trials. Anytime I am in court, I'm soaking in every interaction between the judges and attorneys, creating my understanding of how a courtroom operates. I've learned a lot from listening to the attorneys craft their questions and arguments to the judge. There's truly an art of pulling information out of a witness in order for the court to hear it. Overall, this has been a tremendous internship for me to use my knowledge from law school so far, and to learn by experiencing the inner workings of local law. My fellow interns will tell you about themselves and their experiences this summer.
Hi, my name is Dexter, and I am a summer intern for ADA Trevor Lynch. I'm a rising second-year law school student at Georgetown Law, and I'm a native of Murfreesboro and graduated from Central Magnet School in 2017 before enrolling at Lipscomb University for college. There, I studied classical piano and political science, and before starting law school, I lived in Shanghai, China, teaching English. So after finishing up my first year at law school, I knew I wanted to come back and work for the district attorney's office in a substantive way. I interned for the Rutherford County District Attorney's Office under ADA Sheila Fries and thoroughly enjoyed my experience with her. I helped her in general sessions court and learned so much about the Tennessee court system. I'm continuing to learn through my current internship with ADA Trevor Lynch. After providing me with a brief overview of the facts of the case and explaining to me the motion that was submitted by the other legal counsel, he'll task me with researching that area of law and drafting a response to the memo based on my research. Some of my favorite memories in the office have been sitting with the other interns and talking out an area of law to make sure we fully understand it. As nerdy as that sounds, it can be pretty exhilarating. We also get to work closely behind Trevor in interacting with victims. Getting to hear about their stories and their experiences serves as a real motivator to the work that we do. We get to help bring justice to individuals or families of individuals who have been wronged. While the cases we deal with can be pretty intense at times, just knowing that we're contributing in such a positive way to the lives of the victims is something that I find to be a significantly rewarding feeling as part of the process here at the District Attorney's Office. Also, everybody in the office is so passionate about what they do and are always excited to share that passion with us interns. Whenever another attorney has an interesting case or has a trial going on, they make sure that the interns know so that we can sit in on it or watch it or be caught up on what else is happening in the office. It's a really incredible work environment and has been an unforgettable experience so far.
And finally, hello, my name is Bryce Moore. Unlike the other four interns, I was not born in Rutherford County. However, don't think less of me for that. I was born and raised in Peoria, Arizona, a suburb of Phoenix. Yes, that desolate place where it is 115 degrees every day is what I call my home. And yes, I have seen water before, just not much of it. I attended Arizona State University for my bachelor's degree, go Sun Devils. There, I double majored in history and justice studies. I moved to Tennessee last summer and am currently residing in Lebanon, Tennessee. I'm going into my second year at Belmont University College of Law in Nashville. This summer has been an awesome experience working at the 16th District Attorney General's office and learning what it is like to be a prosecutor. I am unsure of whether I will remain in Tennessee or go back to Arizona after law school, but I have enjoyed my time here so far, particularly in the Nashville area. It's quite a privilege to have so much live music around and so many good people in the area. Working as an intern at the DA's office has been a great exposure to the legal field. I have had the opportunity to attend meetings between defense and prosecution, attend hearings, and see what it's like to be an attorney in general. I spent a great deal of time looking through case files and analyzing evidence for homicides. I've learned a great deal this summer about respect and humility and dignity for victims. And now, Ivy will talk about attempt.
Welcome to What's the Law? We would like to remind you that this segment does not offer any legal advice. We are providing just an overview. There is not enough time in our segment today to give a comprehensive explanation of the law. In this segment today, you will hear from the interns, myself, Dexter, and Bryce, as we present on criminal attempt in Tennessee. Criminal attempt is a type of inchoate offense, which is a crime that is committed by taking a punishable step towards the commission of another crime. Criminal attempt has three elements. Number one, an intent to commit a specific crime. Number two, a substantial step towards the commission of the crime. And number three, failure to consummate the crime. A basic example of these three elements is if a person, one, intends to steal a woman's wallet from her purse. Two, acts by reaching into her purse and looking through the items. And three, fails to grab the woman's wallet because she pulled it away while the person's hands were inside. This person has satisfied all three elements and therefore has committed attempted robbery. Attempt is always attached to a crime, so there is never a charge of attempt only without a reference to a specific crime. Someone can be charged with attempted arson, attempted identity theft, attempted carjacking, but never only attempt. However, attempt is its own individual crime, meaning that attempted kidnapping is not the same as kidnapping. This means that an attempt merges into the target offense. So if a person completes a robbery, that person cannot be charged with both attempted robbery and robbery. In Tennessee, criminal attempt is penalized one classification lower than the most serious crime attempted. For example, first-degree murder is a Class A felony, so attempted first-degree murder is a Class B felony. Tennessee law contains three distinct types of criminal attempt. The first type is when a person intentionally engages in action or causes a result that would constitute an offense if the circumstances surrounding the conduct were as the person believes them to be. This type of attempt is designed to reject the defense of impossibility, meaning that a person cannot argue that they did not attempt a crime simply because the actual circumstances make commission of the offense impossible. For example, a man who sells a substance which he believes and intends to be cocaine when he is actually selling a baggie of flour is liable for attempted sale of a controlled substance. The second type of criminal attempt, which is the most common type, is when a person acts with intent to cause a result that is an element of the offense and believes the conduct will cause the result without further conduct on the person's part. For example, a wife commits attempted murder when she replaces her husband's nightly sleeping pill with a cyanide tablet, intending to cause his death and believing he will take the tablet and die. The fact that the husband does not take the tablet or that he does not die following its ingestion does not alter the wife's liability for attempted murder, since she believed her conduct would cause her husband's death without further conduct on her part. The third type of criminal attempt is when a person acts with intent to complete a course of action or cause a result that would constitute the offense, under the circumstances surrounding the conduct as the person believes them to be, and the conduct constitutes a substantial step towards the commission of the offense. The term substantial step requires courts to answer a difficult question: at what point do acts performed in a course of conduct become punishable as criminal attempt? Dexter will now explain how courts go about defining the substantial step language.
Yeah, thanks, Ivy. So I did want to talk a little bit about the distinction between what Ivy referred to as a substantial step and what is called mere preparation. Generally, criminal attempt is punishable by law, whereas mere preparation for a crime is not punishable by law. Unsurprisingly, there is no clear line that distinguishes mere preparation from criminal attempt. The language that the courts and legislatures use is that criminal attempt is when a substantial step has been taken to actually try to achieve the object of the crime. So just thinking about committing the crime or even planning under some circumstances fails to qualify as a criminal attempt. Let's take an example of somebody who is going to murder someone. Maybe it's her neighbor who won't stop trespassing on her property. So she decides that she has had enough of her neighbor and she's going to go out and buy a gun and shoot her neighbor. She's thought about committing the crime, and she takes steps to go out and actually purchase a murder weapon. Maybe she even makes up a plan on how and when she's going to kill her neighbor. But all these steps that she is taking are just things that she's doing to prepare for the crime, not things that she is actually doing to commit the crime. In order for her to be charged with the crime of attempted murder, she must do something which furthers the commission of the crime and would be able to show a jury that she has made up in her mind that she was ready and willing to go through with the crime. The Tennessee statutory provision for the crime of attempt is generally based on what's called the Model Penal Code. That's a statute that is used as a guideline for states to create their own provisions for crimes. Model Penal Code lists out several acts that could qualify as a substantial step in a crime. They are lying in wait for a victim, luring a victim to the place where the crime will be committed, staking out a place where the crime will be committed, unlawfully entering the place where the crime will be committed, gathering of material that is necessary to commit the crime either at or near the place where the crime is going to be committed, and soliciting another person to assist in the crime. The easiest way to decipher substantial step from mere preparation is to think of substantial step as an action that, if the action were to be interrupted, then it would result in the commission of the crime. So, back to the example with our neighbor, let's say that once she has bought the gun and makes her plan to kill her neighbor, she then goes out on the day that she planned and pulls the trigger with the gun aimed right at her neighbor. That's a substantial step towards the commission of the crime. The crime is murder, and the substantial step that has been taken was pulling the trigger with the gun aimed right at her neighbor. Whatever happens after this point, she can be charged with attempted murder, since there is probably enough evidence to prove that she took that substantial step towards the commission of the crime. Now, let's add one more fact to the example. Say that as soon as she pulled the trigger, her husband, who was standing in the yard outside, jumped in front of the bullet at the very last second and was hit by the bullet but not killed. Our original angry neighbor could still be charged with attempted murder because she still took that substantial step. The fact that her plan did not go according to her plan does not change the fact that she still took a substantial step towards committing the crime. Alongside the fact that mere preparation is not punishable by law, renunciation is also not punishable by law. Renunciation is a defense that you raise once you've been charged with the crime, so you don't bring up an argument of renunciation unless you have first been charged with the crime. It just means that the criminal attempt or the criminal themselves has stopped in the course of the committing of the crime, or that she has somehow abandoned her efforts entirely in committing the crime. And the actor does this in a way to totally thwart the success of the crime itself from ever coming to fruition. Renunciation also must take place before the crime itself takes place and before that substantial step that was previously discussed has been taken. So in the hypo we were using, once our angry neighbor pulls the trigger, there's no possible argument of renunciation because she can't go out and stop the bullet from traveling through the air. However, prior to that point, she can renounce herself of the intent to commit the crime. And according to Tennessee law, if the crime is committed nonetheless, regardless of an individual's efforts to stop the crime from happening, then any kind of argument of renunciation is irrelevant. Another place in which the renunciation is irrelevant is when the crime still occurs. If the individual's attempts to prevent or stop the crime from happening fail, and the crime still occurs, then any kind of renunciation defense that they raise will be shot down immediately. Renunciation has also got to be completely voluntary, so it cannot be something that is done because the individual is in fear of getting caught by something like law enforcement. If our angry neighbor heard the cops were called on her just prior to her pulling the trigger and then decides to not pull the trigger, then the voluntary nature of that renunciation would be called into question. Tennessee law says that the renunciation must be complete and voluntary. So now Bryce is going to talk for a few minutes about a few landmark cases on attempt.
And finally, some key cases on attempt out of Tennessee case law. The first case I would like to highlight is a Tennessee Supreme Court case from 1996, State of Tennessee versus Tracy Reeves. In this case, two middle school students decided to poison their homeroom teacher. On January 5th, 1993, Molly Kaufman and Tracy Reeves spoke on the phone and agreed that Kaufman would bring rat poison to school to place in their teacher, Miss Geiger's, coffee. They also plotted to steal Geiger's car and drive it to the Smoky Mountains. They contacted a high school student, Dean Fouch, asking him to drive the car, which he refused to do. On January 6th, the girls set their plan into motion. Kaufman put the rat poison in her purse and boarded the bus. During the ride to school, she told another student of her plan, showing her the rat poison. The informed student told her teacher of Kaufman and Reeves' plan to kill Miss Geiger. The teacher told the principal. When Geiger entered her classroom that morning, she observed both Reeves and Kaufman leaning over her desk and giggling. Miss Geiger also observed a purse lying next to her coffee on her desk. Rat poison was found in Kaufman's purse, and both Kaufman and Reeves were charged and convicted of attempted second-degree murder. The issue the court took up was, what is the substantial step under the law for attempt? Since the court had not yet defined substantial step in a published opinion, nor did the legislature define it when they changed the statute for attempt in 1989. The court set out to do so here. In this case, the Supreme Court overturned the old Dupuy rule. They ruled that when an actor possesses materials to be used in the commission of a crime, at or near the scene of a crime, and those materials serve no lawful purposes under the circumstances, the jury can find that an actor has taken a substantial step towards the commission of the crime, if the action is strongly corroborative of the actor's overall criminal purpose. In this case, under the old rule for attempt, the girls may not have been held liable for attempted murder because there was no overt act yet, since they had not put the poison into the coffee cup. However, since the statute had changed in 1989, there is no requirement for an overt act. All that is required now is a substantial step, which is up to a jury. In this case, the judgment convicting Reeves was affirmed based on the jury's findings that she had taken a substantial step. The second case I'd like to highlight is another Tennessee Supreme Court case from 1996, State of Tennessee versus Brian Kimbrough. In this case, brothers Terry and Jimmy Lewis conducted a marijuana selling operation in Memphis. On April 13, 1991, Brian Kimbrough and two other associates went to the residence where Lewis conducted the operation. Once within, Kimbrough brandished his pistol. Terry Lewis struggled with Kimbrough for the pistol, and Kimbrough fired several times. During the struggle, both Jimmy and Terry Lewis were shot. Terry recovered from his wounds, and Jimmy's wounds were fatal. The grand jury indicted Kimbrough on 6 counts. At trial, the jury convicted Kimbrough of 2 offenses. 1, voluntary manslaughter, and 2, attempted first-degree felony murder in the attempted commission of a robbery. The manslaughter conviction came with a 6-year sentence, and the felony murder conviction came with a 25-year sentence to run consecutive. The issue the court took up was whether the attempt to commit felony murder is an offense under Tennessee law. Briefly, felony murder is a form of first-degree murder which is defined as the killing of another committed in the perpetration of or an attempt to perpetrate certain enumerated felonies, such as in this case, robbery. The court ruled that since in felony murder the intent runs with the felony committed and not the killing, reckless or negligent killings could not be attempted. There must be specific intent to engage in the action and cause a certain result. Since Kimbrough did not intend to kill Terry Lewis, it was a mere byproduct of his actions in the robbery. No specific intent could be formed to accomplish the unintended homicide. Therefore, the attempt to commit felony murder was not appropriate. The court concluded the offense of attempted felony murder does not exist in Tennessee. It is logically and legally impossible to attempt to perpetrate an unintentional killing. This has been What's the Law? Presented by the 16th District Attorney General Office Interns.
This is Paul Newman. When we return, we will be asking for your help in solving a mystery in our Cold Case Profile. You are listening to this special edition of The Action Line on WGNS.
We'll see a few scattered showers and thunderstorms at times this afternoon. A blend of clouds and sunshine develops, a high in the mid-90s. Tonight's slight chance for storms, a low near 70. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki on News Radio at WGNS. Currently, it's 79.
Good morning. Still filling out paperwork on that earlier crash. Ellington Parkway near Cleveland Street is still busy right now, coming up through Brentwood, Franklin, but it's moving for the most part on 65 north through that section of Williamson County. Not bad, actually, on 24 westbound up through Antioch, coming in from Murfreesboro, Rutherford County. Hey, whether you need a new roof, roof repair, or roof inspection, make it independent roofing specialist. These guys are the best. Check out their website, irsroofs.com. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
For many years, this program has asked for the community's help in solving unsolved homicides. I have searched for the words that would motivate and inspire someone who has information to come forward and help justice be served. Should we stress that the victim's family is suffering because they have lost a loved one and they desperately need some degree of closure? Or do we ask the community this question? If a murderer remains at large in our community, are you, your family, or any of us truly safe? Or perhaps we should provide economic motivation and place our emphasis on cash rewards? Or do we simply say, you should come forward. It is the right thing to do. On a previous broadcast, I asked my friend and former District Attorney General Bill Weitzel these questions. Bill also spoke on why our community should be willing to come forward and help solve an unsolved murder. Listen now to Bill's perspective.
Paul, you know this. It's very important on these cases. As they get age on them, we want people to know that we don't forget about them. We've got somebody out there that's a murderer. And I know people are sometimes fearful. They're afraid if they give information or something that something may happen to them. And certainly I can understand that. But we need people to come forward and put a violent person behind bars. If this person is arrested and charged and convicted, everybody knows that. And hopefully it would make somebody think twice about taking a human life. So it's dedication on the part of the police and the investigators, but it's also a dedication on the part of our citizens to be a part of the process, because without them, we cannot pursue, arrest, and prosecute these cases. And they're responsible just as much in a way as the police are for making their community a safer place. So I would certainly urge anyone with any information on cases to come forward.
Every homicide, every rape, every robbery affects the entire community. People who are victims of these crimes need closure. The people who committed these crimes must be held accountable. Law enforcement needs the community's help in seeking justice. Please listen as we review an unsolved mystery in this month's Cold Case Profile.
On today's Cold Case Profile, we will be asking for your help in solving a brutal murder. The date was May the 17th, 2020, and the time was approximately 5 a.m. when the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a duplex in the 700 block of East Northfield Boulevard. Upon their arrival, the police discovered the lifeless body of 45-year-old Thomas Holland. Thomas Holland had been shot several times. Murfreesboro Police Detective Cody Thomas was assigned as the lead investigator on the case. Early in the investigation, the Murfreesboro Police Department did develop one person as a possible suspect. However, later investigators were able to exclude that person as not being responsible for the death of Thomas Holland. The Murfreesboro Police Department continues their investigation, but as of today, no one has been arrested for this brutal crime. Thomas Holland lived in Murfreesboro, and he had been a volunteer at the Greenhouse Ministries. We ask that you please join law enforcement and Thomas Holland's family in seeking justice for Thomas Holland. If you have any information regarding the murder of 45-year-old Thomas Holland, please contact the Murfreesboro Police Department. The number to call is 615-893-2717. That number again is 615-893-2717. Or you can email your information to crimetips@murfreesborotn.gov. That email address again is crimetips@murfreesborotn.gov. And if you wish to remain anonymous, you can provide your confidential information through Crime Stoppers. If your information leads to an arrest and a conviction in this case, you may be eligible to receive up to $1,000. The number to call is 615-893-7867. Please help us bring closure to those who knew and loved Thomas Holland, and help us to bring justice to whoever caused his death. This is J. Paul Newman, and this has been today's Cold Case Profile. If you missed any part of this program, it will be available shortly as a podcast on the WGNS website. As we end our program today, we thank our producer, Scott Walker. We thank WGNS for providing the airtime. Most of all, we thank you for listening. We leave by saying, a safe community is the responsibility of each and every one of us. For my two co-hosts, Jennings Jones and Trevor Lynch, this is Paul Newman.
bidding all of you a safe and blessed day.
The District Attorney's Office thanks you for listening to today's program. If you have any information regarding criminal activity in our community, please contact one of our law enforcement agencies. The information presented on today's show is solely for informational benefit and not intended to be legal advice. You should always consult an attorney whenever you need or rely on legal advice. Rutherford County's most trusted name in news. Talk Radio WGNS, Murfreesboro.